It's going to be a little bit later, but I wanted to open us up to make sure that we knew, especially what the main thing I'm going to be talking. There's going to be a couple sub sermons are going to be showing up in this particular section. But I sent it out in the weekly newsletter that I really despise partially closed doors by God. You know, we've heard that phrase, when God closes a door, he opens a window. But does he really? Sometimes we want to make things a little bit neater and cleaner for our faith, but I haven't always seen it work out that way. I like it when God emphatically says no to something, because then there's no, there's no ambiguity. I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. I was heading in this direction. God did something to fully and completely stop me, and so I can't keep going that way. Years ago, I went through a time where I was a little unsure of myself, especially being a pastor at Searchlight Ministries. Years and years and years ago. And so I'd been praying about it, talking with Heather about it. And we said, well, you know, is God calling us to stay at Searchlight, or is God calling us to go somewhere else? And so we decided to let's see what God says. And the only way that we could do that within our particular polity is I would put my name on what's called a call list. So I would alert the district president saying, I'm open to receiving a call from another congregation. We talked a lot, and he says, is your ministry done there? I said, no, I don't think so, but I'm going through a time where I'm really unsure, and I need to get some clarity. And so my name ended up on the call list, and I started getting phone calls from churches saying, hey, we got your name. We'd like to interview you and find out if you would be a good fit here at our congregation. So I went, flew to a couple of places, went to Nebraska, went to Texas. And it was very interesting because I got a chance to meet a lot of wonderful people all over the United States. And it was very fascinating what God did. God closed the door very emphatically. And this is how he did it. I would normally, you go through this interview process, and then they would choose, you know, out of the list of, you know, 20 or so pastors, you know, they would, you know, kind of narrow it down to maybe their top three or their top two. And then you would have a voters meeting, and you would discuss and then decide, well, okay, who do we want? And I would always be alerted, voters meeting is happening. I'm like, okay, great. It wasn't like I was sitting around saying, you know, I hope I get the job or anything. But then I'd get a phone call later on, and it always cracked me up. They would call me up. They'd say, hey, we just want to let you know that we voted for someone else, but we would like to know if you would like to remain on the list, because if so, you're the second choice. And so if the first choice declines, many a times churches will speed up the process, and instead of starting over, they would just, let's go to number two. And I'm like, I'm fine. It's whatever you guys want to do. I'm open to whatever. And then usually about 2 to 3 weeks later, I'd get a phone call. Pastor Manning, we want to thank you for having your name. The person whom we extended the call to has accepted the call. Thank you very much. And I'm like, that's fantastic. Great. Blah, blah, blah. Good. And there's a couple of them when they called, I was really praying that it would, that the first guy would take the call. Like, I don't think I want to go there. But, you know, I was trying to understand what was God's will. And it happened to me 3 times. I was always number two, and the first guy always took the call, which, if you've ever been around, if you've been around Lutheranism enough, that is a very rare thing. Very often you have to extend a call several times before someone accepts a call. So God had very clearly, very cleanly said, Mark, you are not leaving Searchlight. Stay there. And after the third time, Heather and I talked, and we said, we believe that God has closed the store. That's great. Love it. Or let's say you're getting ready to go on a mission trip, and you have raised money, you've raised funds, you're trying to do everything you can in order to go on this trip, and then you come to find out that a civil war has just broken out in this foreign country, and the travel agent has called, and all the tickets have been canceled, and everything has been shut down. That's a closed door, right? That's the door is closed, you're not going. Or you apply for a job, you go through the interview process, you get to the end, and they say, you didn't get the job, we're offering it to someone else. Closed door. I love closed doors. I think they're fun because there's no ambiguity. I hate partially closed doors because partially closed doors get a little bit trickier. So partially closed doors kind of look like this. Going back to my example, it would be if a church somewhere in, I guess, the world now, decided to call me as their pastor. They would say, we believe that God is calling you to be the pastor of our church, and then I have a call here to Searchlight Ministries. So which one is it? And then I start thinking about it and praying, and maybe I have some struggles like, I don't know, you know, have I plateaued at Searchlight? And, well, this new place looks good, but there's still some problems because, you know, we got to move, and it's, you know, it's to Minnesota, and it's really cold in Minnesota, and who really wants to live in Minnesota? And did I just offend any Minnesotans? Probably. And, you know, so I like, well, what is it that got, like, is he closing stuff? Is it kind of partially? It's really annoying. Or you're going on a mission trip, and you've raised money, but you are still short of reaching your goal. Do you still push through it? Do you take a leap of faith saying, I think God wants me to stay strong in this and keep going? Or is God partially closing the door and you really should just maybe stop that direction and move in another direction? Partially closed doors are annoying. Or again, if you have a job, you applied for it, and all of a sudden you get a call from the HR department, and they say, hey, we want to offer you a position, but the position is going to be at a substantially lower income than you were hoping and you were applying for, and we can't keep you local. We have to move you elsewhere. Well, shoot, is this a closed door? Is this partially closed? Should I fight through this? Is God saying, hey, you know, really be strong, really trust in me? I'm guiding you through this whole process. Or is God saying, you know, you could go through that, but there's something better if you would just simply wait. How do you decide if something is a partially closed door? How do you decide if you should just keep pushing, or if maybe you should stop and redirect your energies elsewhere? We're going to try and see if we can figure some of that out, especially with what happens with Paul. And it's going to be at the latter verses of Acts 16, 1 to 15. And hopefully, as we learn it, we can maybe discern for ourselves some practical lessons that we can follow to maybe help us out. All right, Acts chapter 16. My heading says Timothy joins Paul and Silas. Remember, Paul and Barnabas had a fight. They were angry at each other. They were like jumping off the top ropes onto each other. Big disagreement. They parted ways. God used the conflicts in order to help them out. So Paul is now with a guy named Silas, and this is when they finally pick up this kid named Timothy. He came to Derb and then to Lystra, where a disciple named Timothy lived, whose mother was a Jewess and a believer, but whose father was a Greek. We had mentioned Timothy the last time through Lystra. Remember, this was probably where Timothy maybe got to know Paul and Barnabas first, maybe did some translation work for him. But Timothy was a young guy. We don't know how young he was. Was he like a teenager? Was he 18? Was he more like 23? We're really unsure of that. But we know at this point, Timothy is going to be picked up. And he comes from a mixed baggage with his parents. His mom is a Jewish believer, and his father is a Greek. So how he was raised would be very unique in how to live out his life. But Paul and Silas, Paul especially, really liked this kid named Timothy. Paul really found a lot of potential in Timothy. And this is where I think it's important, especially for anyone who is in a position of Paul, that there are lots of Timothys around us. And these Timothys, they're not going to do things perfectly. Why? Because they're Timothys. They're not Paul's yet. Remember, Paul has already walked through a whole lot of stuff in his life and then even the past several years to come to faith. You got to give a little bit of grace to these Timothys as they're learning and growing. But Paul sees enough and he goes, Timothy, you're going to come with us on a missionary journey. And again, you wonder, Silas is like, I don't know, is this kid going to be up to it? And, you know, the kind of young punk and, you know, well, he's got the energy. This will be great, but will he be able to do things right? But Timothy agrees to come along with them. And I think it's really important for us as a church. I think we've done a stellar job, a spectacular job of always trying to pour into the youth and the younger generation in order to say, we believe in you. You do not have to have your whole life together in order to do ministry. We will help and guide and encourage and build up. So, verse 2, the brothers at Lystra and Iconium spoke well of him. So everyone seems to be in agreement. Now, what's really funny is what happens in verse 3. If you remember chapter 15, one of the biggest points that was made was you do not need to be circumcised in order to be saved. Remember this discussion? That Jewish covenant was no longer binding in terms of an issue of salvation. And they talked about it, and even they had the letter in their hand as they were going around. They were going to tell all of the Gentile believers, hey, guess what? No snippy, you are good to go. Which is why verse 3 comes as a little bit of a shock to us when it says, Paul wanted to take him along on the journey, so he circumcised him. But wait, I thought we just established that you need not be circumcised in order to be saved. And that is the important distinction. There are things that we say are not pertinent to our salvation, but we still do them in order to do the best ministry possible. If you read the second half of that verse, it says, wanted to circumcise him because of the Jews who had lived in the area, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. So everyone knew that Timothy had not been circumcised. And Paul's like, all right, well, Timothy, this is the problem. We're going to be going to a lot of Jewish people, and we're going to be evangelizing them, telling them of how Jesus Christ fulfilled the law and is now our Savior. But one of the stumbling blocks they are going to have is that you are not circumcised. So, Timothy, are you willing to be circumcised for the sake of ministry? Timothy said yes. I remember this story. I love telling this story. When I had first arrived at the seminary in St. Louis. Heather already likes this story. I remember as I was there, you know, I'm the California guy. Professors from St. Louis hate Californians. It's just the way it is. And I remember one day when I finally got a note in my mailbox, Mark Manning, can you please come and see the Dean of Students, Dean Smith? And I'm like, oh, no, this is not good. You don't want to get called into the Dean Smith's office. So I get there, and of course, I told Heather that I was going to the office, and she said, do you know what he's calling you in for? And I said, I think I have a very good idea of why I'm being called into the dean's office. And that was because at that time, I had an earring. You might be able to see there is a hole there, but I had an earring because, you know, when you're in college, you know, you do crazy things like get an earring, grow a mullet. Oh, I had a great mullet. Nowadays, what are the things that you do? You get the man bun. Oh, not the man bun. And you get the tattoos. That's what we talk about a lot nowadays. So I remember I get called into the dean's office and sat me down. Mark, do you know why I've called you in here today? And I'm like, I have no idea, Dean Smith. Why am I here in your office? And he said, we've got to talk about your earring. No, he did a great thing. He said, look, you having an earring does not affect your salvation. But there is a chance that you may not be called back to California where all the hippies are. I don't think he said that, but I just put that in his mouth. But, you know, it sounds like something Dean Smith would say. He says, you might end up in a Midwest congregation, and he said, and you're out here now in a Midwest congregation serving, so you may want to consider removing the earring, especially when you are in ministry and serving. And if you wear it all the other times, I really don't care. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. It was a lot like this. You know, you want to do this for them. And I ended up at that point just popping out the earring because I'm also a forgetful guy. I knew I was going to show up one day at church. But that's also nowadays, I know a lot of people struggle with, should I get a tattoo? Let's say I'm going into the ministry. Should I get a tattoo? How much will that affect my ministry later on? Or I know that certain things that are being done by me might really hurt and damage family. So how do I live my life in the full and complete freedom of the gospel? Jesus Christ has freed me. But I don't run around trying to be as offensive as possible to every person I meet, especially when I'm trying to be evangelistic. Now, what's interesting nowadays is we've kind of switched it a little bit where our goal is not to be offensive to the outsider, but our goal is not to be offensive to the insiders. So, but this, I think, is still something we need to talk about. When you are at school and people are looking at you and they know you're a Christian, how you act, what you say, and what you do is going to have either a positive or negative effect. Is it a bearing on your salvation? No. If you swear around your friends, is that going to hamper and hinder your ministry to them? And if it is, you may want to reconsider it. Now, if you do swear, is that a salvation issue? Does that mean you're not saved? No, I think everyone in here probably has said a cuss word at least once. Anyone? Yeah, pretty much everyone. I would venture a guess. I know, Paul, when you hit that hammer, like, boom, right? I know that happens to me all the time. So it's not a salvation. So I think it's great that Timothy, all I had to do was pop out an earring. It didn't hurt me at all. Timothy. And verse 3b, that's not written here, is, and they rested several days for Timothy to recover. But I love it because they were willing to do whatever it took in order to be the best minister possible to the people around them. How can I set myself up and do the best so that people can know about Jesus? So, as they traveled from town to town, they delivered the decisions reached by the apostles and elders in Jerusalem for the people to obey, so the churches were strengthened in their faith and grew daily in numbers. All right, so now they get this really interesting thing where the doors are partially closing. So Paul and his companions traveled throughout the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been kept by the Holy Spirit from preaching the word in the province of Asia. So they wanted to head more towards the province of Asia, but they discovered that they were being kept. The word could also be translated, they were being hindered, they were being prevented, they were being forbidden from entering that area. And this is where I started to say, well, how are they being prevented? It's not like their airline canceled their flight. It's not like their visa expired and the border patrol agent said, sorry, you can't come in. How were they prevented from going into that direction? And then it makes it even more interesting because then, verse 7, when they came to the border of Mysia, they tried to enter Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus, which is a very strange phrase, doesn't show up hardly at all. It's a weirdly constructed phrase. The Spirit of Jesus would not allow them to. So they're like, well, we're going to go into to Bithynia, into the area of Mysia, but Spirit of Jesus wouldn't allow it. How did they know that? I mean, did they walk up and as they're walking into the area, there's a big old sign that says, Jesus says, turn back now? I mean, I don't know about you. How many of you would like that? I think that would be fun. I think that would be helpful. Like, Lord, what should I do with my life? And then a big, gigantic sign shows up and says things like, yes, take that job at pastorate in Minnesota. They do have heaters there. Stop being such a wuss. That would be very helpful. Oh, by the way, anytime I ever bring stuff up about me and call, people get really wiggy. So I'm just dispelling no, I don't have a call anywhere, not to Minnesota. I don't think I'd go to Minnesota. It is cool. I would actually need a sign from Jesus to descend and say, Mark, shut up and go. Until then, I'm like, Lord, that's a pretty closed door to me. But there's other things too. What college should I attend? Should I take this job? Should I go to my parents' house for Thanksgiving? Should I marry this person? Should I enter this doctoral program? Should I retire and move to another state? These are all, not Minnesota. I don't know, do they have good taxes in Minnesota? Maybe they do. These are the problems that we had, and I don't know what happened. Did they just pray? Did they just have a feeling? Did they discuss it amongst themselves and say, hey, I'm feeling like maybe we shouldn't be going in this direction? And then maybe did others say, yeah, you know, Paul, I was kind of feeling the same way. Yeah, did Timothy had to have joined in, which I think is a brilliant thing, which I think is one of our lessons. Timothy had to eventually chime in. They're like, well, Timothy, what do you think? I don't know. I'm the new guy here. What am I going to say? Well, no, Timothy, what saith you? Yeah, I don't think we should go. As best as we can tell, they did the process of praying and the process of seeking input. And the input that they sought was not just their own feelings. Who here has been deceived by your feelings? I think we all have. Last night, when I was going to bed, I felt like I was going to die. My feelings were wrong. I'm still here today. But we've all had times where, I don't know, I feel like maybe I should be going in this direction. And are my feelings coming because God's putting those feelings into me? Or is God telling me something different, but I'm overriding that because I feel strongly about it? This is where, again, making sure that you are seeking input, you are trying to find out what others say, you're praying, you're saying, God, help me understand this a little bit more. What should I do? Maybe you're even going to a Timothy. I don't know how many times in my life that I've been struggling with something, and then something random happens. Someone that I really didn't even expect to hear from. And then I get into a conversation. I say, hey, this is going on in my life. What saith you? And then they just look at me and say, well, as the dispassionate third party, this is what I say. And usually at that point I go, oh, wow, yeah, I really needed to hear that. Don't be afraid to be praying. Don't be afraid to have the feelings. Don't bank on them all the time, but sometimes I think God does put the feelings in us so that it drives us. But ultimately, as you seek and you find that out, if you do not feel a clear path has been arranged, well then, make a choice. And know that God is with you. Say, God, I don't know, this is what I'm going to do, and I think I'm going to just keep moving in this direction. And this is when I usually start praying for the closed doors. God, I'm walking this way, and I know it is possible that if you do not want me going this direction, you can stop it. So, Lord, I give you permission. Stop it. Be careful if you pray that, because then if he does shut the door, please don't kick it down or dismantle the hinges or, you know, get the chainsaw and cut a U-size shape out so you can go through it. If God then shuts the door, then God shuts the door. Because sometimes I think that's how God leads us, is not with big old gigantic signs, not with emphatic yeses or nos, but sometimes God leads and guides through the partially closed doors. And it takes a lot of wisdom and understanding to know, how should I do it? So they ended up, so verse 8, so they passed by Mysia and went down to Troas. Now here's where they get the sign, which again makes me believe that all these other ones were just as difficult to understand. It said, during the night, Paul had a vision of a man from Macedonia standing and begging him, come over to Macedonia and help us. So he has a dream. And in the dream, there's a guy. And the guy says, come to Macedonia. Okay. Yeah, if a guy shows up in my dream and says, move to Hawaii, I'm listening to that dude. Go to Macedonia. And again, it must have been an interesting discussion. Hey, Silas, I had a wacky dream last night. Really? What was it about? Well, there was a guy, and he was from Macedonia. Well, how did you know he was from Macedonia? Do you have a shirt saying University of Macedonia? He goes, I don't know. He was from Macedonia. Have you ever had those things where, like, you just know? You don't know how you know, but you know? Timothy, this is crazy, right? This is insane. Macedonia? And he goes, I think this is it. I think this is what we've been wanting. We've been needing guidance from God, and now God is giving us the guidance. I think we need to pursue this. I would maybe call this a partially opened door because it wasn't super clear. A guy from Macedonia says, come here. That's hardly a mandate, but he does it. And I think it's fantastic that they follow through. And of course, there's lots of issues of who is the mystery man of Macedonia? There is lots of theories. There is one theory, and I kind of like it, but I don't know if I buy into it completely, that the mystery man of Macedonia is actually a woman. Just saying. Why do I say that? Well, because they're going to start moving in that direction, and guess who the first person they run into? Yeah, it's going to be a woman. Coming over to Macedonia, after Paul had seen the vision, we got ready, and did you catch that pronoun? We got ready? Who joined them? Well, Paul and Timothy and Silas are already there. Who's writing the book? Why would you use the pronoun we? That'd be if the author has now shown up. So now Luke has shown up. Luke is now part of the band of merry men. We got ready at once to leave for Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. They moved from uncertainty to certainty. And I think that's, as time goes, as things happen, that's hopefully what we move to. And then we have this very interesting encounter with a female named Lydia. So from Troas, we put out to sea and sailed straight for Samothrace, and the next day to Neapolis. And from there, we traveled to Philippi, a Roman colony, and the leading city of that district of Macedonia. And we stayed there several days. And also, it's really nice because it says that they sailed straight there. That meant that the headwinds were there. And I like it when that happens. Isn't that wonderful? When you feel like, I think God wants me to go this direction. And as you start moving in this direction, all of a sudden, there are all of these winds at your back helping you and guiding you along. Isn't that great? Now, does it always happen that way? No, not always. You got to be very careful. Sometimes you're going to hit some massive headwinds. Maybe those headwinds are obstacles that Satan is putting in. Sometimes they're obstacles that God is putting in order to increase your faith and trust and dependence upon Him. Could possibly. But anyway, they're feeling pretty good about this, and they end up in Philippi, the Roman colony, leading city of that district of Macedonia. And they stayed there several days. So on the Sabbath, we went outside the city gate to the river where we expected to find a place of prayer. Again, the way they evangelized, they always went to the synagogue first. The problem is, what do you do if you get into a city and there is no synagogue? Do you just stop ministering? No. For them, the way that synagogues were established was you just have to have 10 Jewish men in an area could gather and start creating a group. Well, if you didn't have that, then other people had to start it. So what would you do if you had women who were there? That would be something that they would have to try and start to do, is the women would help lead this. So and they would often gather by these water sources, and that's why they were down at the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. So they're like, well, there's no synagogue in this town. We know this. And so we're going to go to the river. This is where people would be gathering. We sat down and we began to speak to the women who had gathered there. One of those listening was a woman named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth from the city of Thyatira, who was a worshiper of God. So this is interesting. Lydia, don't know if she's married. Maybe she is. Maybe she's got kids. We don't know. But she's worshiping God. She's one of these God followers, but Gentile. And she deals in purple cloth, which is very fascinating. I can go at a long thing. I'm not going to do it with purple cloth. This would be a very wealthy woman. Wealthy and high-powered. I love it. So they start talking, and the Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. So when she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. So she's like, you got to come. We got to get my whole family baptized, and this is going to be fantastic, and you're going to come to my house. Now, this would be very awkward for four guys to go over to this lady's house. You know, was she married? Was she not? Maybe the husband was there. Maybe the husband's died. Maybe they were divorced. But there was also other people in her household. She was wealthy, and she had a lot of this stuff. And I love it because she said, if you consider me a believer in the Lord, she said, come and stay at my house, and she persuaded us. She's not going to take no for an answer. She is like, nope, you're going to do this. There is no choice in the matter. You are coming to my house. I just absolutely love that this is how this happens. And I think it's amazing that God had now given them the confirmation they needed that this is where they were supposed to go. They had these partially closed doors. There were some issues. They're like, God, what should I do? They prayed. They talked. They did it. They found some success. They're like, I think this is good, and I think this is right. And so they made it happen. And what a wonderful thing when God gives us the confirmation we need. So if you have a decision to make, if you have partially closed doors, you're trying to discover something, you're trying to figure it out, what do you do? Maybe this is the time to pray, seek guidance, maybe even from people who are not part of your inner circle, and then maybe take a chance on something and see what God does with it. I am grateful for what we did with the trunk or treat. For those of you, I know that, sorry, people have been walking around because the sound went out on YouTube, so they're just trying to fix that. Sorry for all you YouTubers. I'm just kidding. I'm just playing with you now. That's just really rude. I'm thankful for the trunk or treat. This was a perfect example of something where God had given us a partially closed door to the trunk or treat. Right? There's a thing called a pandemic, and we can't do what we normally did. Now, we sat there and we said, well, this is a partially closed door, so what do we do? Do we kind of push through it? Is God saying, do that? Is God saying, no, save resources and do something else? And we talked about it as a staff. We prayed about it. We thought about it. We said, let's try it. Let's see if this is something that God is wanting us to do. Maybe God's asking us to modify and change. And so we did. And hundreds of kids, somewhere to the tune of, we think, between 350 and 400 kids came through the trunk or treat. We tried it, and it worked. I would say that I'm glad that that partially closed door, we decided to go through it. We decided to say, you know what? I believe God's calling us to push that door open a little bit, and we're going to try and do. Or maybe, you know what? Maybe it isn't that door. Maybe it's the door right next to it that kind of looks like the same door, but we got to modify it. And we just did it. And God gave us great tailwinds. And God gave us great success. And to God be all the glory. May that be for you as well. In Jesus' name, amen. For our time of communion, is the sound still out on Facebook? I mean on YouTube? It's so bad? Oh, wow. I feel bad. And we even changed some stuff, so, well, we'll keep playing with it. Sometimes I'm still frozen. It sometimes feels like this is a closed door, and it's like I keep kicking the door, and it's like, yeah, it's like I went to Minnesota and I was frozen, yeah.